Welcome to the Murder House Radio Show. I'm your host, X. On this show, we will be covering serial killers, killers, mass shooters, disappearances, true crime, and the most deplorable things and people in history. All that good, dark stuff. The Murder House Radio Show will be a radio show slash podcast. I'll be uploading videos every Friday at 4 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. Make sure you hit the like and subscribe button. Once you hit the subscribe button, hit the bell notification and select all to get all notifications if you are viewing on YouTube. And hit follow if you are listening on a podcasting platform. So sit down, get comfortable, grab some coffee or whatever your preferred beverage is, turn off the lights, and enjoy the show. Hey guys. I hope you're having a good Friday. I hope your Friday was good. And I hope this makes it better. So, yeah. How is your week going? How is your month? Let me know down in the comments below. Also, the sources for this video will be in the description. So go check those out if you want. But, yeah. Let's jump into today's video. Today's video is going to be on Joseph James DeAngelo Jr., aka the Golden State Killer. He was born November 8, 1945. He is an American serial killer, serial rapist, and burglar, and he was a police officer who committed at least 13 murders, 50 rapes, and 120 burglaries across California between 1973 and 1986. That's quite the spree right there, and quite the timeline-ish. DeAngelo was responsible for at least three crime sprees throughout California, each of which spawned a different nickname in the press, before it became evident that they were committed by the same offender. In the San Joaquin Valley, he was known as the Visalial Ransacker. Interesting. After that crime spree, he moved on to the Sacramento area, where he became known as the East Area Rapist, and was linked by modus operandi to additional attacks in Contra Costa County, Stockton, and Modesto. DeAngelo committed serial murders in Santa Barbara, Ventura, and Oregon counties, where he was known as the Night Stalker. Ooh, before Richard Ramirez, I think. And later on, the original Night Stalker, due to the serial killer Richard Ramirez also being called the Night Stalker. Also, he was the original. Nice. Nice. DeAngelo is believed to have taunted and threatened both victims and police in obscene phone calls and possible written communications. Interesting. During the decades-long investigation, several suspects were cleared through DNA evidence, alibi, or other investigative methods. In 2001, after DNA testing indicated that the East Area Rapist and the original Night Stalker, Arones, were the same person, the acronymy Arones came into use, whatever that means. The case was a factor in the establishment of California's DNA database, which collected DNA from all accused and convicted felons in California, and has been called second only to Virginia's in effectiveness in solving cold cases, okay? To heighten awareness of the case, crime writer Michael McNamara coined the name Golden State Killer in early 2013. The FBI and local law enforcement agencies held a news conference on June 15th, 2016 to announce the renewed nationwide effort offering $50,000 reward for his capture. So he's a recent serial killer here. Like, this is all, like, only a few years ago. Like, fucking 4 or 5 years ago-ish. Holy. On April 24th, 2018, authorities charged 72-year-old D'Angelo with 8 counts of first-degree murder based upon DNA evidence. Investigators had identified members of D'Angelo's family through forensic genetic genealogy. Holy. So, like, someone did a DNA test or whatever for their family heritage, and then they linked that to the cases or whatever, and then narrowed it down to him. That's interesting. And yeah, that DNA stuff's a real ass kicker for criminals. This was also the first announcement connecting the visual ransacker's crimes to D'Angelo, owing to California's statute of limitations on pre-2017 rape cases. Ooh. Statute of limitations. I wonder how long the statute of limitations are for rape. That's an interesting question. If you know, leave it in the comments. D'Angelo could not be charged with the 1970s rapes. Yeah, they were too long ago. But he was charged with August 2018 with 13 related kidnapping and abductions attempts. Okay. On the 29th of January, 2020, D'Angelo pled guilty to multiple counts of murder and kidnapping. So that was only last year. Holy, real recent here. As part of a plea bargain that spared him from the death penalty, D'Angelo also admitted to numerous crimes with which he had not formally been charged with, including rapes. Oof. On the 21st of August, 2020, D'Angelo was sentenced to life imprisonment without the possibility of parole. So there's the recap of the Golden State Killer. We will dive into this here shortly, the rest. But yeah, he had a long murdering and raping and burglary career, it seems, because he was only caught in like 2018-ish and got sentenced 2020. That's so wild. And it's literally been almost a year, yeah, since he was sentenced. That's crazy. But yeah, so his early life and career. Joseph James D'Angelo was born on November 8th, yeah, in Bath, New York. Interesting. To Joseph James D'Angelo Sr., his father, a sergeant in the United States Army, and Kathleen Lewis DeGroat, okay? He has 2 younger sisters and a younger brother, so he's the oldest. A relative reported that D'Angelo was a young child. He witnessed his 7-year-old sister raped by 2 airmen in a warehouse in West Germany. Oh, that's not good. Where the family was stationed at the time. Yeah, that'd be traumatizing. Following his conviction, one of the D'Angelo sisters claimed that he was abused by their father while he was growing up. That's sad. Tragic right there. That's a hell of a start to his early life, I guess you could say. He did get his GED in 1964. He played on the school's junior varsity baseball team. Prosecutors reported that D'Angelo committed burglaries and tortured and killed animals during his teenage years. Oof. D'Angelo joined the United States Navy in September 1964 and served for 22 months during the Vietnam War as a damage control man. Persons who are in damage control rating are the Navy's Coast Guard's maintenance and emergency repair special. Okay, weird. On the cruiser USS Canberra. And the destroyer tender USS Piedmont, P-I-E-D-M-O-N-T, beginning in August 1968, D'Angelo attended Sierra College in Rocklin, California. He graduated with an associate degree in police science, so that's like forensics, I think. Police science is a study that study and research, which details with police work, studies and research in criminology, forensic science, psychiatry, psychology, jurist, whatever that means, community policing, criminal justice. So the whole around police course, basically. A whole around law course, but not like a lawyer or a judge or whatever. With honor, so he did real good at that. He attended Sacramento State University in 1971, where he earned a bachelor's degree in criminal justice. Oh, so he's a smart man. D'Angelo later took postgraduate courses and further police training at the College of the Santa Cruz in Visalia, V-I-S-A-L-I-A, then completed a 32-week police internship at the Roxville Police Department. You see, nowadays, with all the political stuff going on with the police, maybe police should have to do what this guy did, a bunch of college courses and all that stuff and a bunch of training, because 32 weeks, that's a long time. Like, boot camp isn't even that long for the military. But, yeah, that'd be interesting. Probably would fix a lot of the problems we have. But, yes, from May 1973 to August 1973, he was a burglary unit police officer. Oh, that fits in with his activities. But, yeah, having relocated from Crustus Heights, he then served in Bern from August 1976 to July 1979. Then he was arrested for shoplifting a hammer and a dog repellent. Okay, then. I mean, you're a cop. You could just buy that. Then was sentenced to 6 months probation and fired that October. So he is fired for shoplifting. Wow, that would suck. During the process of being fired from the city, D'Angelo threatened to kill the chief of police and allegedly stalked the chief's house. Holy, isn't threatening, let alone a police officer, a criminal offense, and you can be, like, charged with that? That's wild. But, in May 1970, D'Angelo became engaged to Bonnie Jane Colwell, a classmate at the Sierra College, but she broke off the relationship after D'Angelo threatened her with a gun in order to force her to marry him. Good choice for her. In November 1973, he married Shannon Mary Huddle, H-U-D-D-L-E, in Placer. No, now known as Loomis, okay? So in Loomis, that's where they got married. In 1980, they purchased the house in Curtis Heights, where he was eventually arrested, okay? Huddle became an attorney in 1982, and they had three daughters. Two were born in Sacramento, and one was born in Los Angeles before the couple separated in 1991. In July 2018, Huddle filed for a divorce. Good. They were divorced in 2019. Imagine having a father and a family man who was a serial killer and a rapist. That would be wild. Because, like, there again, I said this in another podcast. I don't remember which one. But, like, imagine making him mad and he just gets that look in his eye. That would be wild. Very wild. He'd get that killer look and then he'd just shake it off and be like, alright, go to your room. And you'd be like, holy, daddy, chill. So far he has two wives and three kids. But, yeah. D'Angelo's employment history in the 1980s is unknown. From 1990 until his retirement in 2017, so his almost arrest, he worked as a truck mechanic and at a Save Mart Supermarkets distribution center in Roseville. He was arrested in 1996 over an incident at a gas station, but the charges were dismissed. What was he charged with? We need the details. We need the deets, bro. His brother-in-law said that D'Angelo casually brought up the East Area Rapist in conversation around the time of the original crimes. Oof. That's a little suspicious. But I mean, that's probably the buzz of the neighborhood. The neighbors reported that D'Angelo frequently engaged in loud, profane outbursts. Well, I mean, if you got anger issues and you just give zero fucks and, you know, you just yell at random shit. Excuse me, my nose is stuffy. One neighbor reported that his family received a phone message from D'Angelo threatening to deliver a load of death because of their barking dog. Holy, that's quite the threat. I mean, I'm gonna come over there, I'm gonna deliver a load of death. Holy. He was living with a daughter and granddaughter at the time of his arrest. Oof. Imagine how reality-breaking that would be, finding out your dad's a serial killer and serial rapist. But, as I said, the DNA evidence linked D'Angelo to 8 murders in Glotia, Ventura, and Dana Point, and Ira Ravine. 2 other murders in Glotia, lacking DNA evidence, were linked by modus operandi. He pled guilty to 3 other murders, 2 in Rancho Cordova and 1 in Vizilia. And D'Angelo also committed more than 50 known rapes in California counties. You know, I said that. But, these are his crimes we're getting into now. So, Vizalia, V-I-S-A-L-I, Ransacker. Vizilla, Ransacker. Well, I'm just going V, Ransacker, no pun intended. It was long suspected that the training ground of the criminal who became the East Area Rapist was V, California. Although earlier V crimes dating back to as early as May 1973 and other sprees like that of the Cordova cat burglar, just stealing cats, as well as burglaries that took place after the McGronin shooting, are now suspected to be linked as well. Okay, over a period of 20 months, so that's just under 2 years, D'Angelo is believed to have been responsible for 1 murder and about 120 burglaries. Interesting. In late April 2018, the V chief of police stated that, well, there was no DNA evidence linking D'Angelo to the Central Valley cases. His department had other evidence that played a role in the investigation, and he was confided that the V ransacker has been captured, okay? So they assumed it was him, kinda. Although the statute of limitations on the burglaries have each expired, D'Angelo was formally charged on August 13th, 2018, with the first-degree murder of Claudia Snelling in 1975. In 2020, D'Angelo pled guilty to the murder of Claudia Snelling. Okay. But, yeah, what's your, thoughts on, the evidence needed to convict someone? Because, like, if it's murder, I think you need the most evidence possible to convict them, because that's a serious crime. Same with, you know, rape and all that other stuff. But, like, non-violent burglaries, like, if there's DNA evidence left behind, good. If there's a video clearly showing it's you, good. But, like, if it's just a, like, lousy description, you need a little more than that, in my opinion, for that type of stuff. Non-violent stuff, you need more, evidence for. But also, less evidence for, I mean, for non-violent stuff. But the more violent it is, I'd say the more evidence you need, and the better evidence you need to be 100% sure that's your guy. Because having a violent crime on your record or whatever is not good at all. But yeah, let me know what you guys think down in the comments below. One of the first recorded ransacking or attacks or whatnot was on March 19th, 1974, when a sum of $50 in coins was stolen from the piggy bank. You gotta do what you gotta do. Most of the ransackers' activities involved breaking into houses, rifling through or vandalizing the owner's possessions, scattering women's underclothes, and stealing a range of low-value items while often ignoring banknotes and higher-valued items in plain sight. So straight anarchy, basically. The ransacker would also often arrange or display items in the house. Items emptied including piggy banks and coin jars. And stolen items often included blue chip stamps, foreign or historic coins, those could be valuable, and personal items such as single earrings, cufflinks, rings, or medallions. But yeah, he also stole about 6 weapons and various types of ammunition. Okay. The personal items such as, I'm getting mixed up here, boys. Multiple same-day ransackings were common as well, that's ballsy, including 12 separate incidents on November 30th, 1974. But, I heard of this game. Well, it's not really a game. It's like a criminal game. You try to rob 7 7-Elevens during the night or whatever. It's like 11 7-Elevens. It's something like that. You try to rob or raid as many as you can without getting caught or before you get caught. I don't know where I heard that from. I don't even know if it's a real thing. But, yeah. There's that. The common MOs of the burglaries included scaling fences and moving through established routes such as parks, walkways, ditches, and trails, attempting to pry open multiple points of entry, particularly windows, leaving multiple points of escape open, especially windows, as well as the house, garage, and garden doors, moving removed window screens onto beds or into bedrooms, placing warning items such as dishes or bottles against doors on door handles. That's smart. Wearing gloves given the absence of fingerprint evidence. That's smart. He knew what was up. I mean, if I was going to commit a burglary just to steal shit, because I'm not about to hurt anybody, I'd do it during the day. And then I would wear gloves, all that good stuff, look like a mover, whatnot. And I would also put the plates up. That's a good idea. But, yeah. And then there was, like, shootings and stuff. D'Angelo, yeah, broke into the home of Claudia Sealing. I said that. And he murdered her. Celia, a journalism professor at the College of Santa Cruz, had previously chased a prowler discovered under his daughter's window. Okay, around 10 p.m. on February 5th, 1975, on September 11th, he was awakened around 2 a.m. by a strange noise. Upon leaving his bedroom, Senilian shouted and ran through the open back door and confronted a ski-masked intruder in his Cape Porta, attempting to kidnap his daughter, who had been subdued with threats and being stabbed or shot. Senilian was then shot twice, staggered back into the house to his wife, and later died. Oof. After being shot, the assailant fled the scene, leaving behind a stolen bicycle at 615 Redwood Street. After the murder, Beth Sealing, 16, a cheerleader at M.T. Whitney High School, underwent hypnotization in order to gather further details. The V Police Department also committed more resources to apprehending the ransacker and a $4,000 reward, equivalent to $19,366 in 2020, was posted. Nighttime stakeouts were set up near houses that had previously been prowled, but the ransackings continued. Well, god damn. On December 12, 1975, around 8:30, a masked intruder entered the backyard of a house at 1505 Kiowa Avenue, near where the ransacker had been reported to frequent. When Detective William McGown, on the stakeout inside the garage, attempted to detain the man, the suspect shrieked, removed his mask, and fake surrendered after McGow fired a warning shot. However, he jumped the fence to the house. He also pulled out a revolver with his left hand and fired once near McGow's face, shattering his flashlight. Nearby officers rushed to aid McGowan, and the shooter was able to escape. Items collected as evidence included the flashlight, tennis shoe rackets, that's weird, a dropped loot, namely blue chip stamps, and a blue sock full of coins. Okay, then. That's interesting stuff. In 1976, D'Angelo moved to the Sacramento area, where his crimes escalated from burglaries to rapes. The crimes initially centered on the unincorporated areas of Charmichael and Cruz Heights and Rancho Cordova, east of Sacramento. Okay, so all those areas. His intentional modus operandi was to stalk middle-class neighborhoods at night in search of women who were alone in one-story homes, usually near a school, creek, trail, or other open spaces. That would provide a quick escape. Oof. He was seen a number of times, but always successfully fled. On one occasion, he shot and seriously wounded a young pursuer. Most victims had seen or heard a prowl on their property before the attack, and many had experienced break-ins. Police believed that the offender would conduct extensive reconnaissance in a targeted neighborhood, looking into windows and prowling in yards before selecting a home to attack. Makes sense. Any good criminal does their reconnaissance. It was believed that sometimes he entered the homes of future victims, unlocked windows, unloaded guns, and planted ligatures for later use. Okay, so I don't know what ligatures are, but alright. He frequently phoned future victims, sometimes for months in advance, to learn their daily routines. So he'd phone them and see when they're home or when they're not home. That's actually pretty smart. Although he originally targeted women alone in their homes with children, D'Angelo eventually preferred attacking couples. Ooh, yeah. He would attack the couples, make the wife tie up the man, tie up the kids, put plates on them and stuff. So if he heard the plates move, he'd kill them all. And he'd often rape the wife, take all the stuff, and then leave. But, yeah. His usual method was to break into a window or sliding glass door and awaken the sleeping occupants with a flashlight, threatening them with a handgun. Victim subsequently bound with ligatures, often shoelaces, that he found or brought with him, then blindfolded and gagged with towels he ripped into stripes. Female victims were usually forced, then bindings were often so tight that the victim's hands were numb for hours after being untied. He separated the couples, often stacked, threatening to kill everyone in the house if you heard them rattle. Oof. But that'd be hard, because imagine how hard you'd be shaking. He moved the woman to the living room and often raped her repeatedly, sometimes for several hours. That'd be nightmarish right there, man. D'Angelo sometimes spent hours in the home, ransacking closets and drawers, eating food in the kitchen, drinking beer, raping the woman again, or making additional threats. Victims sometimes thought he had left the house before he jumped from the darkness. Oof. He typically stole items, often personal objects and items of little value, but occasionally cash and firearms. He then crept away, leaving the victims uncertain if he had left. He was believed to escape on foot through a series of yards and used a bicycle to get home or a car, making extensive use of parks, schoolyards, creeks, creek beds, and other open spaces that kept him off the streets. Well, I'm surprised he didn't have any military background or something, because this sounds like military precision right here. And if you watch any military documentaries and that kind of stuff on reconnaissance and how to avoid detection, they state a lot of this stuff. But, yeah, I've definitely heard and watched a few documentaries on this dude. But, yeah, I forgot what I was gonna say. If it comes back to me, I'll be sure to share the thoughts. The rapist operated in Sacramento County from the first attack in June 1976 until 1977 in May. After a three-month gap, he struck in nearby San Joaquin County in September before returning to Sacramento for all but one of the next 10 attacks. The rapist attacked five times during the summer of 1978. In those counties before disappearing again for months, attacking then moving primarily to Contra Costa County in October and lasted until July 1979. Holy, and then there's a list of rapes here. I'm not reading all of those, but oh, there's not even, oh, there's the names. No, those aren't even names. I think those are just where they were located and stuff. Locate, dates, times, you know, holy shit. Some of these were in, like, broad fucking daylight. Like, early morning hours, I see here. And then, early morning, fucking 12 a.m., what? That's, yeah, all early morning, late evening here. But, you can check these out. These will be in the, description or whatever if you want to look at those. But here are some of the murders. A young Sacramento couple, Brian Magario, a military police officer, a policeman at the Mather Air Force Base, and his wife, Kate Magiori, were walking their dog in her Rancho Cordova area on the night of February 2nd, 1978, near where five East Area rapist attacks had occurred. The Magoras fled after a confrontation in the street, but were chased down and shot to death. Oof. Some investigators suspected they had been murdered by the East Area rapists because of their proximity to the other attacks. That would make sense. And a shoelace was found nearby. The FBI announced on June 15th, 2016, that it was confident that East Area rapists had murdered the Magoras. And their name is spelled Magiores. On June 29th, 2020, D'Angelo entered a guilty plea for these murders. Holy. But yeah, that's wild. Alright, let's get into the original Night Stalker, 1979 to 1986. I'm sorry if you hear background noise, that's just my mom using the vacuum or whatever. Shortly after the rape committed, on July 5th, 1979, D'Angelo moved to Southern California and began killing his victims first striking in Santa Barbara County in October, then attacks lasted until 1981, with a lone attack in 1986. Okay, only the couple in the first attack survived, altering neighbors and forcing the intruder to flee. Okay. The other victims were murdered by gunshot or by bludgeoning, so that's how we'd kill, shooting them or beating them to death with an object, like a club. Since D'Angelo was not linked to these crimes for decades, he was known as the Night Stalker in the area before being renamed the original Night Stalker after the serial killer Richard Ramirez received the former nickname. But, yeah. So, crimes. So, right here it lists 7, and I'm pretty sure these are the murders. So, Monday, October 1st, 1979. Non-attempted murder, botched attack, okay. Second, Sunday, December 30th, 1979. Robert Hofferman and Deborah Manning, okay. Okay, so there's, 2 murders right there. There are Charlene and Layman Smith, Thursday, March 13th, 1980. Kathy and Patrice Harrington, Tuesday, August 19th, 1980. Friday, February 6th, 1981. Manuel Witham, yep. Monday, July 27th, 1981. Sherry Domingo, and Gregory Sanchez, and Janelea Cruz. Sunday, May 4th, 1986. Holy. And, these were all in Santa Barbara, Ventura, Orange, Santa Barbara, and Orange. And those are all the counties in order from the ones I read from first to last. But, that's, sad and wild. And then it goes on to list the dates and, what happened here. But, if you want, I'm not going to read them all. You can go and read some of them if you want, but I'll read like the first 2. So 1979, on October 1st, an intruder broke in and tied up Goleta couple, alerted by hearing him say, "I'll kill him," to himself. The man and woman tried to escape when he left the room and the woman screamed, realizing that the alarm had been raised. The intruder fled on bicycle. Oh, so that's the first one I read. A neighbor, an FBI agent, responded to the noise and pursued the perpetrator, who abandoned the bicycle and knife and fled on foot through local backyards. The attack was later linked to the Offerman Manning murders by shoe prints and twine used to bind the victims. Okay. On December 30th, a 44-year-old Robert Offerman and 35-year-old Deborah Alexandra Manning were found shot to death by Hofferman's condominium at Hofferman's condominium on Averdina Pequen in Goleta. Hofferman's bindings were untied, indicating that he had lunged at the attacker. Neighbors had heard gunshots. Paw prints of a large dog were found at the scene, leading speculation that the killer may have brought one with him. Okay. The killer also broke into the vacant adjoining residence and stole a bicycle, later found abandoned on the street north of the scene, from a third resident in the complex. Okay. So those are the 2 first ones, but you can come here and read the second ones. Well, not the second, but the other ones. Communications. Let's get into the letters. So written communications. Examine excitement's curved poem. He sent them a poem? What? Excitement's Crave poem. Holy. In December 1977, someone claimed to be the East Area Rapist sent a poem, Excitement's Crave, to the Sacramento Bee. The Sacramento's major office and television station, KVIE. On December 11th, a masked man eluded pursuit by law enforcement personnel after alerting authorities by telephone he would strike on Watt Ave that night. Okay, so here's the letter. Excitement Crave. All those mortals surviving birth slash upon facing maturity, taking inventory of their worth slash to prevail society, choosing values becomes a task slash oneself must seek satisfaction. The selected route will unmask slash character when plans take action. Accepting some work to perform slash take at fixed pay, but promised for more, okay, is a recognized social norm, as is decorum seeking lore. Achieving while others lifting should be cause for deserving fame. Leisure tempts, excitement seeking, what's right and expected seems tame. Jesse James has been seen by all, and Son of Sam has an author. Others now feel temptations called, Sacramento should make an offer, to make a movie of my life that will pay for my planned exile. Just now, I'd like to add wife of Mafia Lord to my file. Your East Area Rapist and deserving pest. See you in the press or on TV. Well, that's quite the fucking note to receive. But it's got a Son of Sam reference, but it didn't really make all that much sense to me. Maybe you could put it together if you can forgive my horrible-ass fucking reading skills. I kind of butchered that or whatever, but yeah. He did make a series of phone calls, or people did, claiming to be the killer or rapist or whatever you want to say. The first one, I'm the East Side Rapist, March 18th, 1977. On March 18th, the Sacramento County Sheriff's Office received 3 phone calls from a man claiming to be the East Area Rapist. None were recorded. The first 2 received at 4:15 and 4:30 p.m. were identical and ended with the caller laughing and hanging up. The final call came in at 5 p.m. with the caller saying, I am the East Side Rapist and I have my next victim already stalked and you guys can't catch me. What a cocky guy. You're never gonna catch me. December 2nd, 1977. A man claiming to be the rapist called the Sacramento police saying, you're never gonna catch me. East Area Rapist, you dumb fuckers. Yo, that sounds like he's claiming a gang. I'm gonna fuck again tonight. Be careful. The call was recorded and later released. As with the previous call, the next victim was attacked that night. Holy. Another call, Merry Christmas, December 9th, 1977. During the Christmas season, a previous victim received a phone call that she attributed to her attacker. The caller said, Merry Christmas, it's me again. Holy. But yeah, he was also known to call his victims that he left alive. Watts Avenue, December 10th, 1977. Shortly before 10 p.m. on December 10th, Sacramento authorities received 2 identical phone calls saying, I'm going to hit tonight, Watts Avenue. Both were recorded and the caller was identified as the same person who placed the call on December 2nd. The law enforcement patrols were increased that night, and at 2:30 a.m., a masked man eluded officers after being seen bicycling on Watts Avenue Bridge. When spotted again at 4:30 a.m., he discarded the bicycle and fled on foot. The bicycle was stolen. Okay. And then another call, I'm gonna kill you. The first known rape victim received a wrong number call asking for Ray. On January 2nd, 1978, the call was recorded. The police suspected that it might have been the same caller who made the threatening call to her later that evening. Okay. That call was also recorded and identified by the victim as the voice of her assailant. The caller said, "Gonna kill you, gonna kill you, gonna kill you, bitch, 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 fucking whore." Holy, this guy's a fucking dickhead. Counseling service. A man claiming to be the East Area rapist, the contacted counseling service and said, "I have a problem. I need help because I don't want this anymore." After a short conversation, the caller said, "I believe you are tracing this call," and hung up. Okay. Later calls, 1982 to 1991. In 1982, a previous victim received a call at her place of work, a restaurant during which the rapist threatened to rape her again. According to Contra Costa County investigator Paul Holes, the rapist must have chanced to patronize the restaurant and recognize his victim there, so he probably went to the restaurant or whatever. In 1991, a previous victim received a phone call from the perpetrator and spoke with him for 1 minute. She could hear a woman and child in the background, leading speculation that he had a family. Oof. The final call, 2001. On April 6, 2001, 1 day after the article in the Sacramento Bee linked the original Night Stalker to the East Area Rapist, a victim of the rapist received a call from him. He asked, "Remember when we played?" Damn. Those calls are messed up, bro. Holy. Holy shite. So before all these cases were linked, the original Night Stalker cases, they were trying to connect to the East Area Rapist cases in 2001. And they were also trying to connect to the Goetta cases as well. They're trying to connect them all to see if they were the same person. The links are primarily due to similarities in modus operandi. So, like, the same MO, I guess you could say. Well, yeah, definitely MO, because that's the abbreviation. Oh, that's what MO means. Okay. One of the already linked original Night Stalker double murders occurred in Ventura, 40 miles southeast of Goleta, and the remaining murders were committed in Orange County, an additional 90 miles southeast. Okay, in 2001, several rapes in Contra Costa County, believed to have been committed by the East Area Rapist, were linked by DNA to the Smith, Harrington, White Tahoon, and Cruz murders. A decade later, DNA evidence included the Domingo Sanchez murders were also committed by the East Area Rapist, who identified as the Golden State Killer. Okay. This here is the investigation, by the way. So, On June 15th, 2016, the FBI released further information related to the crimes, including new composite sketches of the and crime details. A $50,000 reward was also announced. The initiative included a national database to support law enforcement. All right. They even had a phone call tip line to handle the tips or whatever. Eventually, through the use of the fucking genetic genealogy searching on GED Match, investigators identified distant relatives of D'Angelo. Yes. We mentioned this earlier, including families directly related to his great-great-great-great grandfather dating back to the 1800s. Holy interesting. Based on this information, investigators built about 25 different family trees. The tree that eventually linked D'Angelo alone contained approximately 1,000 people. Over the course of a few months, investigators used other clues like age, sex, and place of residence to rule out suspects. Populating these trees, eliminating suspects one by one until D'Angelo remained. Holy, real painstaking right here. Yes. I wouldn't say this is all circumstantial because they had the evidence to link it to the family, but like, holy, that's like some real fucking like piece it together type shit. During the investigation, several people were considered and later eliminated. Betty Glasby from Golette was considered a suspect by Santa Barbara County investigators. He was murdered in Mexico in 1982 before the murder of Jaleen Cruz. This eliminated him. Obviously, you can't do it if you're dead unless you're a ghost. Paul Cornfed Shendier, a high-ranking member of the Aryan Brotherhood, was living in Orange County when the Harrington Manuel Whitenham and Janiel Cruz were killed. A DNA test cleared him in the 1990s. Joe Alsip, a friend of a business partner of the victim, Layman Smith. Alsip's pastor said that Alsip had confessed to him during a family counseling session. Alsip was arraigned from the Smith murders in 1982, but the charges were later dropped. He is innocent. His innocence was confirmed by DNA in 1997. Yo. That would suck, though, being, like, falsely convicted for serial murders and rapes and shit. That would fucking suck. After D'Angelo was arrested, he was also suspected of committing the November 15th, 1974, rape and murder of Jennifer Armour. The December 26, 1975 rape and murder of Donna Jo Richmond northeast of Exterior, and November 11th, 1978 murder of a woman and her son in Semi Valley, California, but was cleared as a suspect in all three murders by DNA testing. Okay. Sorry about that hard reading there. My mind was going a little too fast for my mouth to keep up, I guess. It just be like that sometimes. But his arrest and trial. On April 24th, 2018, Sacramento County Sheriff's deputies arrested D'Angelo. He was charged with 8 counts of first-degree murder with special circumstances. Special circumstances in a criminal law are actions of the accused or conditions under which a crime, particularly homicide, was committed. Such factors require or allow for a more severe punishment. On May 10th, the Santa Barbara County District Attorney's Office charged D'Angelo with 4 additional counts of first-degree murder, so bringing the total up to 12. I have to count on my fingers sometimes. I'm dumb. Identification of D'Angelo had begun 4 months earlier when officials led by Detective Paul Holes and FBI lawyer Steve Cramper uploaded the killer's DNA profile from the Ventura County rape kit to the... What? Rape kit? A package of items used by... to be personal website, okay. The website identified 10 to 20 people who had the same great-great-great-great-grandparents. Yeah, so we all got into that or whatever, and that's how they narrowed down D'Angelo. On April 18th, a DNA sample surreptitiously concluded that the door handle of D'Angelo's car, another sample, was later collected from the tissue found in D'Angelo's curbside garbage can. Both matched the samples associated with the Golden State Killer's crimes. Oof. If anything, I guess this would mean burn your garbage and wipe everything down after you touch it, or, yeah, or even are near it. That's what this recommends. But don't do anything where they need your DNA, like, holy fuck. Since D'Angelo's arrest, some commentators have raised concerns about the ethics of the secondary use of personally identifiable information, also known as personal data, personal identifiable information, or personal identifiable information relating to an identifiable. Okay, then. D'Angelo made a confession of sorts after his arrest that cryptically referred to an inner personality named Jerry, who had forced him to commit a wave of crimes that ended abruptly in 1986, according to Sacramento County prosecutor. He said the following to himself while alone in a police interrogation room after his arrest in April 18th. I didn't have the strength to push him out. He made me. He went with me. It was like in my head. I mean, he's a part of me. I didn't want to do those things. I pushed Jerry out and had a happy life. I did all those things. I destroyed all their lives. So now I've got to pay the price. It's either he's batshit crazy or he's starting at that insanity plea. What do you guys think? But D'Angelo could not be charged with the rapes or burglaries as the statute of limitations had expired for those offenses. But he was charged with 13 counts of murder and 13 counts of kidnapping. D'Angelo was arraigned in Sacramento on August 23rd, 2018. I'm searching up what the statute of limitations are for burglary and rape. Hold on. It says here, under California law, victims of sexual abuse generally have 2 years to file a civil suit against the perpetrator. For minor victims, the time starts to run at the age of majority and allows 8 years for filing a civil lawsuit. So I think that basically said the statute of limitations is basically 8 years. Okay, minor victims, so what, like minors? And then the year or two for adults, maybe, so about 2 to 8 years for rape. But okay, so yeah, that's that. Then it says here the statute of limitations is the limit of time for the police and prosecutors to file charges against you with the court. The general rule is that the statute of limitations for felony burglary is 3 years, and the statute of limitations for misdemeanor burglary is 1 year. Alright, that makes sense. That makes sense. But, yeah. Alright. Prosecutors estimated prosecutors from 6 different counties collectively estimated the case could cost taxpayers $20 million and at least 10 years. Holy. On April 10th, 2019, court proceedings, prosecutors announced that they would seek the death penalty, and the judge ruled the cameras could be allowed inside the courtroom during the trial. On March 4th, 2020, D'Angelo offered a plea to guilty if the death penalty was taken off the table, which was not accepted at the time. On June 29th, in a deal to avoid the death penalty, D'Angelo pled guilty to 13 counts of first-degree murder and special circumstances, including murder committed during burglaries and rapes, as well as 13 counts of kidnapping. On August 21st, 2020, D'Angelo received multiple consecutive life sentences. Consecutive means one after another. You die, and then your other one starts. Without the possibility of parole, D'Angelo offered a brief apology after listening to days of pre-sentencing victim impact statements. I've listened to all your statements, each one of them, and I'm truly sorry to everyone I have hurt. Thank you, Your Honor. I don't think he's sorry, man. I think he is just trying to plead to get a lesser time. But his incarceration on November 3rd, 2020, D'Angelo was moved to North Caron State Prison. D'Angelo is currently incarcerated in protective custody, of course, because no one likes rapists in prison, and especially California, they're hard on that shit. In protective custody at the California State Prison, Corcoran. I've heard a lot about that place. But yeah, the politics there aren't too kind to his nature of crimes. But yeah. There's also like a bunch of movies and documentaries about the Golden State Killer. Documentaries for sure. But yeah. Just search up the Golden State Killer documentaries and movies. He's probably even on Netflix as well. So yeah, that is Joseph James D'Angelo Jr., aka the Golden State Killer. Thank you for listening to this episode on the Murder House Radio Show. I hope you have a good rest of your Friday or whenever you're listening to this. Check out the social medias and the sources in the description below. Make sure you hit the like and subscribe button. Once you hit the subscribe button, hit the bell notification and select all to get all notifications if you're listening on YouTube. If you're listening on a podcasting platform, hit follow. See you on the next episode. This is your host X, signing off.